From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
The 40th annual Bristol Bay Fishtable Celebration in Naknek brought together fisherfolk, residents, and visitors for a weekend of food, music, arts, and many other traditions. As KDLG's Corinne Smith reports, there was palpable excitement at the arrival of a historic wooden sailboat, which took a 300-mile journey from Homer to Naknek, hearkening back to the history of sailboat fleets in Bristol Bay.
Crack 4 pounders made an awful din.
But with one fat ball, the Yank stove us in.
A crowd of about 50 people have gathered on a clear, cool morning to see the historic sailboat, the Libby McNeil Libby 76, launch for a morning of fishing in Naknek. The 5-man crew who sailed the restored vessel from Homer sang the crowd a sea shanty before setting out on the water. The sailboat is a piece of Bristol Bay history. Before 1952, mariners fished the bay by sailboat. The double-ender is like one of thousands crewed by teams of two at the mercy of the wind and tides. A few hours later, the sailboat returns with a smiling crew and 3 fish caught by a handmade net by local Marcia Dale of the Watsituya Net Shop in Naknek. On board were local commercial fishermen, father and son Bill and Eric Hill.
Launched, it was beautiful, nice and warm. Then it started to rain again. But despite the weather, it was just a great time. It was a lot quieter. There's not so many moving parts. It's pretty simple.
His father, Bill Hill, says their family has been fishing since time immemorial. And going out in the sailboat was a connection to that past.
The elders talk about fishing in sailboats, and many of my family members, all of our family members, come from the fishing background. And so this is a part of the history that has been in our family, but that we've never had the chance to experience. So being able to jump on a sailboat and throw a little piece of net in the water and catch a couple fish, that was reliving a history we'd heard about, but it just is really nice to experience it.
The arrival of the sailboat coincides with a weekend of events for the 40th annual Bristol Bay Fishtival, a celebration of the fishing community and way of life organized by the Bristol Bay Borough Chamber of Commerce in Naknek. Larice Egley is the director of the Bristol Bay Historical Society and one of the organizers.
It's just a wonderful end-of-the-year celebration, and rather than festival, it's fishtival, because it's our salmon harvest and our fish that make our whole year go round.
The weekend of Fishtival is chock full of fish-themed events and activities around town, including a bazaar, art, kids' games like a fish toss, a pool tournament, and the Beargrass Music Festival with bands performing across venues around town.
So to be able to celebrate with the whole community, whether it's the local residents or our seasonal industry participants all together after a long season of working shoulder to shoulder, it's just a magical time to be able to celebrate.
Artist Kitty Sopo returned to Fishtival to showcase her latest artwork, classic Alaskan imagery on stickers, as well as pinup style female figures with a fish theme.
Honestly, out of all my shows across the state, this year, Fishtival has been my most successful, my most rewarding, and my most exhausting as well. And I think a lot of the fishermen can agree. Excuse me. The people who fish and the folks who work in the cannery can agree that it was a hard season, hard work, lots of exciting energy.
On Saturday, there's a parade down Naknek's Main Street, led by the fire engine and followed by cars decorated by local organizations, tribal governments, and businesses. There's a parading Grinch dressed in bright orange fishing gear with dozens of stickers across their body stating No Pebble Mine, a demonstration against the proposed mining project at the headwaters of Bristol Bay. The weekend also celebrated the dedication of the Diamond and Cannery in South Naknek to the National Registry of Historic Places. Katie Ringsmith is the Alaska State Historian and the NN Cannery Historic Project Director, and says this is the first Bristol Bay cannery to receive national recognition.
Simply put, the Diamond NN Cannery is historically significant for its association with the Bristol Bay salmon commercial fishery, and also the 54 buildings which are still standing and how they continue to hold the stories of the underrepresented cannery workers who contributed to the industry.
Each season, there are more stories. And with a record harvest across Bristol Bay this season, people at Fishtival have a lot to celebrate. In Naknek, I'm Corinne Smith.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, which recognizes the importance of Alaska's sustainable fisheries to the state's economy.
The Shunack tribe of Kodiak has been looking for ways to reduce the number of invasive signal crayfish in the island's Buskin Lake in order to protect crucial salmon habitat. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, tribal biologists are trying a shocking new method to try to thin their ranks.
Matt Vendale is the Shunack tribe's natural resources director. On a recent Wednesday morning, he went to Buskin Lake to test out a new method of catching the invaders. An electrofishing pack.
We're going to try to make these mud bugs ride the lightning.
The pack looks like it comes from Ghostbusters. A large battery connects to a control box mounted onto a hiking backpack frame. It connects to a long rod with a hoop at the end. A long rat tail extends behind the pack, with an exposed stretch of wire at the end that drags behind Vendale and his team, completing a circuit from the hoop at the end of the rod, through the water, and back up the tail. There's a lot of current running through that wire, enough to temporarily paralyze small freshwater animals. When it comes to hunting juvenile crayfish, the current propels them out of hiding and into Vendale's waiting net.
You pull your thing out, I'll try and get him. Oh, he's gone. Where'd you go?
Will Frost is the instructor for this electrofishing expedition. The former habitat biologist with Alaska's Department of Fish and Game was hired as a consultant by the Shunack tribe. He says that the electric shocks don't harm other wildlife.
It doesn't really hurt him. It just flexes their muscles sporadically, and it gets them to come to the surface, and we can net them up, ID them, and so if we get juvenile salmon, we can just return those, put them in a bucket, let them recover real quick, and then return them to the water.
After a few hours, Vendale has a small menagerie of crayfish in his net. Juveniles and adult crayfish close to the shore are all affected by the electricity. The electrofishing pack might seem like an extreme solution, but Vendale says Buskin Lake's crayfish are an extreme problem. They present an existential threat to the salmon population, and the Shunack tribe has been trying to eradicate them before they spread to other salmon habitats. The electrofishing pack is another way to fight the problem.
The whole point of this was to try to catch the smaller ones and the juveniles that otherwise we wouldn't necessarily be able to catch when we're diving. We're doing exactly that. I mean, granted, I would like to be catching the adults more easily, too, but you know, that's why we have a bunch of different tools in our toolbox to deal with these mud bugs.
The Shunack tribe of Kodiak has scheduled 2 community crayfish boils this summer in an effort to get locals involved in eradicating the pest from the Buskin Lake. Participants can help collect the mud bugs and will get to boil their crayfish and eat them on site. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Statewide support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by Satellite Technical Services, authorized distributor for the ACR Bivvy Stick, a small two-way satellite communicator. Dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
On March 10th, the Center for Biological Diversity and the group Save the North Pacific Right Whale presented the federal government with a petition to add a swath of ocean waters extending from Kodiak Island to the Bering Sea to the areas that have already been designated as critical habitat for North Pacific right whales. The new critical habitat would connect a patch of ocean off Kodiak's east side with a large section of the southeast Bering Sea by scooping up the territory in between the two. The new area would be contiguous, extend out past the continental shelf, and encompass a region especially busy with both ship traffic and fishing activity. Last month, NOAA Fisheries declared that the petition, quote, provides substantial scientific information indicating that revision of critical habitat may be warranted, close quote. Designation of critical habitat for the North Pacific right whale is based on where the extremely rare documented sightings of the whale have occurred. Sightings in the southeast Bering Sea led NOAA Fisheries to carve out a 35,460 square mile area as critical habitat for them there. Sightings in the Gulf of Alaska on Kodiak's east side compelled NOAA to designate a 1,175 square mile area there, too. The argument of the recent petition for expansion is basically that it's unlikely the whales are teleporting from one critical habitat to the other, so the waters in between should all be critical habitat, too. But what would expansion of the critical habitat mean for the humans? Well, a critical habitat designation does not come with its own set of rules. Instead, it means that for any activity inside the habitat that requires a federal permit, and what doesn't, the permitting agency would have to consult with NOAA Fisheries to make sure the activity doesn't harm the critical habitat. On the East Coast, where they have a longer history of right whale protection measures, that has meant things like speed limits for ships and closures for fisheries. For some high traffic zones on the East Coast with a perceived risk for vessel strikes, a 10-knot speed limit has been enforced. Anyone who has seen a freighter whiz past them near Unimak Island can tell you that this would be a considerable reduction in speed for them. For a fishing boat, 10 knots is pretty fast, but work vessels might contribute to one of the other two human-caused threats identified by NOAA, marine entanglement. In April, NOAA Fisheries implemented an emergency action prohibiting buoy lines between federal and state waters within the Massachusetts restricted area to reduce the incidental mortality and serious injury to North Atlantic right whales. In other words, NOAA looked out into the bay and saw a wall of lines and buoys at a time when whales were migrating out, so they dropped the gavel and closed the fishery. The closure was for the entire month of April and was implemented rapidly until new permanent rules can be developed. So, NOAA has not been shy about pulling the trigger on quick closures if they think right whales are at risk. NOAA Fisheries is accepting comment on the proposed critical habitat designation until September 12th. You can comment by visiting regulations.gov online or provide written comment to the Alaska Regional Administrator of NOAA Fisheries, Attention Records Office, P.O. Box 21668, Juneau, Alaska, 99802.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.